Talking aches and pains and sprains and strains now here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Quick thanks to the folks at Bayfield, by the way, for Bayfield in Bloom. We had a wonderful time. Jim Packard and I, some great folks up there. And thanks to everybody who helped us out and for all the great people who visited and sat in on the show. We had a great crowd, and I really had a wonderful time. And I'm going to have a wonderful time today, too, talking with Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, who come by about every month, I guess, with some information on helping you and I deal with our aches and pains and sprains and strains. I don't think I have any sprains or strains, but
usually you know when that happens.
Yeah, I had a friend, Denny Moore, this last week, who was in the front seat of his car, reached into the back seat to get something while stopped, and tore a tendon right off.
Oh, yeah.
And had to have surgery 2 days later.
Yeah, when those kind of things happen, that means that the injury was waiting to happen.
is that what it is?
With that kind of an activity, because you would think he'd be lifting 100 pounds and would tear a tendon.
Yeah, he'd just reach back to get something. So. Yeah.
You know, but it's a great metaphor for what happens to people in other situations, like with your back. You know, people say, well, geez, I just bent over to pick up a pencil and I blew a disc in my back.
Right. Yeah.
It's the same kind of analogy. It's the same process that goes on of over time degeneration, and our tissues aren't as well hydrated or as strong as they used to be. And then it's the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Right. Yeah, that's the analogy that I use with patients. It wasn't that one bend that it was the number of bends that set them up to be hurt like that. And so part of the rehab process is taking as many straws off the camel's back as we can and build up a buffer. So next time they bend down and pick up a pencil, they don't hurt themselves.
Right. And on the prevention side, when people come in with that first insult or they're younger and they're having a little bit of achy pain, we try to educate them about how to move and how to use good posture and lifting mechanics and so on, so that every time they bend or move, they don't put a lot of stress and strain on some of those structures that that tend to wear down over time.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, Catherine in La Crosse may have some straws on her back. I don't know. We'll see here. Catherine, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
It's actually my daughter's back that has some straws.
Okay.
She has reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and she's had it for about 5 years. She's 14. And we're not currently in a flare, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So her flares come and go. The last one was a good 8 months, and we've been almost flare-free for the school year. It's her first school year in a few years that she's managed to go through. But what's happening now is instead of her foot or her feet getting really cold and white, they're doing the opposite. They're getting very hot.
Hmm.
No pain. So we use contrast baths, and we've always used brushing and different physical therapy things for when they're cold. Do you have suggestions, or have you heard of RSV patients who just get hot?
You know, maybe to begin with, you should explain what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. The RSD is a term called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and there's newer terminology for it now.
Right.
A lot of people call it CRPS, chronic regional pain syndrome, and they've subclassified it into different types because they tend to play out differently over time, depending upon the type of it. But basically, it's when what seems like a minor injury sets off a cascade of problems that seem to far exceed the existing pathology. And what happens is your nervous system tends to go haywire. Your nervous system becomes overactivated and reacts with generally excessive pain. That's why it's called chronic regional pain syndrome. And that pain tends to spread over time.
Correct.
And then you get these, what we call the sympathetic changes. That's why it was called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, where you get the hot, cold, numbness. You get a glossy skin appearance. You get osteoporosis in your bones. So I'm most familiar with the cold, white hypovascularity thing. It sounds like you're getting a hypervascularization, which I guess could be another sympathetic response.
Right, exactly. Just at the other end of the spectrum. Yeah, I would agree. I'm more used to seeing the cold and the white as opposed to what you're describing, Catherine. But I have read some cases, and it is written up in some of the books that of what you're describing as well. So I don't know if I could explain why there's been this switch, if we assume that it is associated with her chronic regional pain syndrome or not. How long has this change been going on?
It's only been the last month, and so I was thinking the weather change, because that's there. You know, mm-hmm. it's a different with the heat, hopefully, mm-hmm. in Wisconsin starting.
It's hard to say. I mean, a part of the problem is that with this whole CRPS phenomenon, it's not terribly well understood. And we know that a lot of it is regulated at the spinal cord level, and mm-hmm. it may be that she's getting some change at the spinal cord level, and other neurons are getting excited that are stimulating other receptors, so upregulating the sympathetic nervous system in a way. So I guess my response would be, in terms of the treatment for this, I would treat it in a way that makes her most comfortable, because the overarching theory in treating this is decreasing her pain. Because the more her pain is upregulated, the more that upregulates the spinal receptors and tends to expand the problem. So I would say whatever it is that makes her feel comfortable and decreases the symptoms associated with that is where you should go. If it's cold, use cold. If it's contrast, use contrast.
And that's kind of what we've been doing. I just hadn't heard. I've been looking through the research, and as you know, there's not that much out there. So I thought mm-hmm. I'd just run the past you that this is a completely yeah. different system than yeah. or symptom than what we've had.
Yeah, and I presume she's continually being monitored by her medical professionals.
She is, okay. Although she hasn't been in a flare, so to speak, for a bit. So
that's
we haven't
good.
Been into her main doctor, although she's been doing some biofeedback work. And
okay, okay. Very good.
You
very
might
good.
Want to even just give them a phone call, Catherine, mm-hmm. just kind of even update them.
Yep, and, sounds good.
And see what kind of feedback they can give you as well.
Yeah. Good luck. Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you, Catherine.
Appreciate the call. And Ann in Duluth, Minnesota is up next, so let's go to Ann. Hi, Ann.
Hi. My knee has been bothering me when I'm sitting, and so the knee is bent. So if I go to a sporting event or anywhere where I can't move around and stretch my leg, an airplane, really, it bothers me. Then I trained for a mini triathlon about a month ago, which is not exactly my style, but I did it.
Good for you.
It really bothered me after that. So that has subsided, but I have the ongoing discomfort and aching when I'm sitting.
Mm-hmm. Is that in the front of your knee, behind your knee?
Kind of in the front of it, and sometimes it's behind it and slightly below, like at the top of my calf.
Okay. How are you on things like stairs and so on?
They can be uncomfortable. Not bad.
Okay.
Except for after the triathlon,
right.
Then it was bad.
How was biking versus running?
Neither one of them particularly bothered me at the time, because
okay.
I was trying to see which one was bothering me. And
okay.
I do take a spinning class regularly,
mm-hmm.
but I am not a runner.
Okay. All right. Chances are, do you see any swelling? Last question.
There was some swelling on the inside of the knee.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, the two differentials are, one is patellofemoral pain, which is classic pain in the front of your knee when sitting for long periods of time, and ascending and descending stairs. Mm-hmm. Tends to pretty much hurt in the front of your knee, kind of a deep, achy pain, and then it can radiate mm-hmm. around from there. Sometimes you get a little swelling, but most often not perceptible swelling. The other would be your garden variety arthritis in the knee joint. And that would be associated with a little bit of swelling, pain behind the knee. It would tend to bother you more in running versus biking. So either one of those could be the underlying problem. I would, at this point, I would probably treat it as, you could actually treat them fairly similarly, safely. And that is, I would work on stretching my quadriceps. Work on stretching the muscles in the back of your thigh, your hamstrings and your hip muscles, strengthening your quadriceps by doing like a straight leg raise.
Okay.
And we can add some resistance to that. A wall sit with your knees at about 45 degrees, if that doesn't hurt. And then hip and core strengthening, you know, abdominal muscles, pelvic muscles,
okay.
glutes, things like that. And hopefully that will take care of the problem. If not, a visit or two to a physical therapist can help make the correct differential diagnosis and help fine-tune the right exercises for
mm-hmm.
you.
And are you training for anything right now?
No, I'm recovering.
Sounds like a good part of your training program. All right. Well, especially, you know, if you have another triathlon coming up somewhere in the future, you know, like Lori said, if you go in to see a PT for just a visit, let them know what your future plans are. Bring in your footwear, and they should be able to help design a good program for you.
Okay, great. Good. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Ann. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Kurt is up next from Washburn. Hi, Kurt.
Yes, I'm going to try to describe my wife's deep muscle pain. And it sounds similar to what you've been, the other guests, people have been calling in. But also, maybe it's connected with her fibromyalgia, maybe not. It's a severe pain, muscle in the rear hip, you know, right in the...
We lost you, Kurt. I tell you what, try calling back again. We'll see if we can get you on the air. I'm very sorry. But you have disappeared. He was on a cell phone there. Mm. Before we go back to the phones, tomorrow, by the way, I've got a sports kind of... topic. It's about baseball, but I noticed on basketball and on the basketball side, L.A. Lakers Kobe Bryant has been wearing a TENS unit, which is transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, something like that, to relieve lower back pain.
Right, right. I know he had injured his back.
TENS units, they're called.
Right, so a TENS unit is the short term for this. And what I understood was he got a number of, he's working with a physical therapist, and they treat him in a variety of ways, including this electrical stimulation, which is designed to stimulate certain nerves to gate pain or dampen pain.
Oh.
So if you decrease the degree of pain, it allows the muscles to relax more. You can tolerate a more aggressive rehabilitation program. So usually by itself, it is not a cure, but it is something that can facilitate the process and speed up the recovery process. And it's something unless they're in the shower, they can wear all the time, you know, in between when they're working with the physical therapist. But he recovered pretty quickly. I'm sure he still has some pain, but he was playing at a pretty high level at the next game.
I guess
A TENS unit isn't typically used for most people with an acute back injury. He's in a special category, of course.
Right.
In our use, we tend to see it more often for people who have chronic pain, who can't seem to initiate a rehabilitation program because everything they do hurts. So we use the TENS unit to try to get their pain down to a level where we can actually initiate some rehabilitative exercises.
So is it like a shocking system, or it's...
It's a tingly kind of thing.
Tingly.
You put it on and it's constant, and there's a number of different ways you can use it. You can do a constant or an intermittent, and you see which one works best for you for decreasing your pain.
Tom in Green Bay has a question for you, so let's go there. Tom, hello.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling about a stress fracture in my foot, the second metatarsal.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to decide what the best procedure is. I mean, I've had it x-rayed and I've had it CT'd, and it had a non-union, so it's really old. But it's hard to wear that cam boot and do everything forever. Is it likely to re-injure it if you just walk on it rather than with some stiff shoes rather than wear a boot?
Oh, what's the physician telling you?
Well, you know, they're being a very, very, very cautious thing. You know, you got to wear the boot. You got to ride the scooters in the grocery store and get a handicap parking sticker.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And have they talked about the prognosis for a healing, or are they, what other interventions are they doing for healing?
The ultrasound bone healing system.
Okay. All right.
I guess my question is, does it tend to just kind of heal itself, or does it stay irritated if you just walk on it?
Well, boy, that's a really good question. In that comes down to one of the things that we struggle with every day, and that is how much load can any given tissue tolerate before it fails. It's the engineering piece of physical therapy. So we look at factors like, well, what are your gait mechanics? How do you walk? How much how much load are you putting on it? How much do you weigh? What kind of surfaces do you walk on? So some people will be able to walk on it because of their body weight, the surfaces, their shoe wear, their posture, their mechanics. All are such that they're not going to put that bone on overload. Other people who you hear clumping down the hallway, clump, 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 every step, and they're pretty heavy, they're walking a lot on cement or asphalt, well, they're going to overload that bone. It's not going to heal. So that's the long answer to say I can't answer that question in your case. It may or may not heal. And I guess I would suggest following the advice of those who have seen you and examined you.
Yeah,
Tom, it sounds like they haven't given up on the bone healing yet, the way that they're treating you. And so, you know, I would really follow the directions to the T because you want that bone to heal. So until they tell you that it's not going to heal, there's no chance it's going to heal, then it comes down to choices of, all right, you can get rid of the boot. If you can find footwear that is as comfortable for you, then you can get out of that boot. But as long as they feel that there's a chance that healing can occur, union can occur, I would stick with the program.
Yep. Okay. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good luck, Tom.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it very much. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today, as we talk aches, pains, sprains, and strains. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheryl Gasser, our on-air producer for this portion of the program, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now as we move along, talking aches and pains. And Kim in Oshkosh is up next, so let's go to Kim now. Hi, Kim.
Good morning. The soles of my feet are often kind of burning and just killing me. They're dry. I have had a long-standing toenail fungus thing. But when I get up in the morning, it's very hard even to put my feet on the floor for a while, and it tends to get better as I move around. But basically all day long, it's both soles of my feet are very tender, kind of burning. What the heck is going on?
Kim, is it more at the ball of your foot by the toes? Is it right at your heel?
It's concentrated at the heel.
Okay.
I've tried, you know, inserts, heel inserts, and various pads in my shoes. I wear good shoes, but it persists.
Okay. Any numbness or tingling along with this?
Sometimes.
Okay. All right. Any symptoms up higher, up into the thighs, calves, up in your low back area?
No, on one foot, the Achilles part of my heel hurts a little bit, but not beyond that.
Okay. All right, well, a couple things. You know, we frequently get calls from people with heel pain or heel and mid-foot pain first thing in the morning, and it's plantar fasciitis. But typically, people don't describe that pain as being burning and numbness and tingling, you know, some things that you used. You worry about nerves are irritated for some reason, some sort of neuropathy, and especially with it being in both feet.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a local foot problem, or it could be something up higher, even up in your low back area. Have you seen a physician for this at all, Kim?
I haven't.
All right, that would be my recommendation, is to start there and have them do, you know, a good examination, see what kind of diagnosis they come up with. But it doesn't sound like our classic plantar fasciitis that we frequently hear from folks about.
Right, and typically that gets better as you get up and get moving and feels pretty good throughout the day, as long as you're moving, but then it feels worse after you've been sitting. And I don't hear that kind of pattern to your pain.
Well, yeah, that is a pattern. I drive a car for a living, and every time I after a long bout of sitting, I stand up, it sort of begins all over again.
Okay. It could possibly be plantar fasciitis then, but given that it's not following the pattern of plantar fasciitis, or some of the symptoms you're relating don't precisely fit that pattern, I'm not comfortable saying, oh, that's what it is, and you should treat it as such. I'd rather that you would have a professional take a look at it, and if they determine, yep, that's what it is, and they can send you to a physical therapist, and they have a number of strategies to help you deal with it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the dryness that you mentioned, again, the physician will examine you well from a vascular standpoint as well as a nervous system standpoint. And if they rule those things out, then you can come back to more of the musculoskeletal orthopedic things that a physical therapist can help you with a lot.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Kim. Appreciate it. Brian in Sheboygan is up next. Hi, Brian.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Okay, I've kind of got a compound thing, and it might take a little bit of story to kind of get to it, but it's basically my knee. And I guess when I was younger, I had Osgood Schlatter, you know, when the thing kind of comes away from the bone.
Yep.
And then, so that went away, though. Everything was fine. And so as I got older, you know, I still ran a lot and been riding a lot of motorcycles and been snowboarding and doing stuff like that. And so this year when I went snowboarding, my left knee, it got real tender. And there was no, like, loss of strength or anything like that. It just got real sore. And since it was a joint thing, I took glucosamine and things like that. And I don't know if it just got better on its own or if it just, if the glucosamine helped. But now, you know, it's been 6-7 months since I've been snowboarding. And now it's just real tender. When I sit for a long time, it just kind of gets uncomfortable. It's almost like a ticklish feeling type of thing. Does that make any sense?
Where in your knee does it hurt?
Kind of towards, it's almost like inside. Like if I push on the back, it kind of feels like I'm getting close to it.
On the back of your knee?
Yeah.
Okay, and do you have any swelling?
No, it's not swollen or anything.
Okay.
It's just I have to constantly stretch it out and try to make it a little better.
Okay. Clicking, catching, giving way, any of that stuff?
No. Okay. Just uncomfortable.
Okay. How old are you?
26.
Okay. But nothing in the front of your knee?
No, it's not. No.
Okay.
I can touch it all. Okay. Like I can touch it all over. There's no sore spots. It's just on the inside. It's really...
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, it doesn't fit any typical pattern. It sounds like a pattern of maybe a meniscus tear, although you usually have swelling with that. It could also be, there are a couple other outside possibilities that might happen in someone in your age group. There are a couple things. One's called a discoid meniscus.
Okay.
And what happens is instead of your meniscus being C-shaped or O-shaped, it's kind of like a flat disc. And a lot of times it doesn't show up symptomatically until you get a little bit older and you start putting a lot of demands on it. And you wouldn't necessarily have an acute injury, but it would behave a little bit like a meniscus problem. So this isn't a straightforward problem. I'd probably go in and have it looked at and have somebody sort out your signs and symptoms, take a little closer look at your knee and see if they can find the source. But there's nothing in the garden variety category of patellofemoral pain or, you know, iliotibial band kind of stuff. All those things, you would be able to find a tender spot somewhere on your knee, on the outside, in the front of your patellar tendon, or any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd go in and have it looked at, and then you can go from there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Brian, for calling. And George in Glendale, it's your turn. Hi, George.
Good morning.
Morning.
I heard you at the beginning of the program talk about people who, when they lift up a pencil, have a back problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, well, I am 73 years old. I've had two low back surgeries, but that was a long time ago. We now have a six-month-old granddaughter who we babysit for once or twice a week, who weighs 18 and a half pounds, who plays on the floor and is starting to crawl and all that kind of stuff. How do I pick her up safely without killing my back and move her from the floor to the sofa and then from the sofa to her crib or her changing table and that sort of thing?
Yeah, you bet. And she's only going to get bigger and more wiggly.
Yeah.
As
really?
She ages here.
I wouldn't have guessed.
Yeah. It's the wiggly part.
Yeah, that can really get you into trouble. It's a great question. And it's a challenge with that age group, whether you're getting in and out of their crib, from the floor, the bathtub, or basin you're using to bathe them. It's hard to keep the good body mechanics that we teach people because of what you're leaning over. In terms of going down to the floor or up from the floor, if you can split that activity up into pieces. So if you're standing and holding her, if you can sit – And then from the sitting, from the sofa chair, then go down to the floor. When you get up off the floor is go from the floor up to a chair and then up to standing. So kind of divide it up into mini tasks when you go from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And as she's moving with you, when you go through each stage here, you want her as close to your chest as possible. If you hold her away from your body, that increases the lever arm and the stress on that low back area.
Right.
So you hug them as you go down to the floor with them and get them up from the floor.
We love hugging.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a good thing. It's a good thing. You know, when you're leaning over a crib or over the bathtub, having one foot in front of the other, as opposed to your feet underneath your shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
One foot in front of the other allows you to bend that front knee and kind of weight shift toward the crib or away from the crib. If you stand with your feet parallel to one underneath your shoulders, what you do is you bend at the waist, and it's much harder to bend with your legs versus that low back area.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can, instead of having your feet parallel side by side, have one leg in front of the other, and again, that allows you to bend your knee and use your legs as much as possible.
And that's the same as true when getting her up from the floor. If you can get down in that half kneeling position where you have one knee on the floor and the other one with your foot flat on the floor and your knee bent, and you can bring her to your chest and get up from there. That same principle applies.
And sort of like when I'm hugging her, holding her with one hand and use the other hand to brace against the sofa or a chair or something,
sort
of get a little momentum or a little leverage that way.
Exactly. And the same thing going down. If you have one hand free to be on the arm of a chair or on the seat of a chair to help lower you, to help your knees, keep some pressure off your knees as well.
Mm-hmm.
Once she gets big enough, and of course you don't want to teach kids to climb all over furniture, but you know, at some point when they can stand, you can have her stand on the chair while you get down to the floor, and then you can hug her and get her down to the floor. So you can, once they can stand and become a little more independent, it takes some pressure off your back.
Yep.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah,
sounds
have
good.
Fun with her.
Yeah, have fun. Thanks, George. Thank you very much. Mike and Whitefish, will go to you next. Hi, Mike.
Good morning. I'm 37 years old. About a year and a half ago, I sustained a low back injury during a bicycling event, and since then it's been confirmed by MRI to be a ruptured disc at L4-5 and L5-S1. I've had steroid injections to no avail from very expert pain management group, and it's been suggested to me that I try a device called a non-surgical decompression device, which is sort of a high-tech machine that does what they used to do when they put you in traction. I was wondering, since there's not much information available on these, I was wondering if you have any experience with them, whether they're effective, and whether there's any source other than the Internet that could tell me how legitimate they are.
Yeah, Mike, good question. The decompression device, is it where they put pins in your spine and then separate them?
No. No, it's just a table, and it has supports under your armpits, and it just sort of stretches you, but it does it intermittently with a computer thing.
Okay.
And it's called the DXM 9000. It's sort of, you know, it sounds a little bit Star Trek-y, but... I met a person at a hockey game in Chicago that had the treatment, and he's a EMT who hurt his back lifting a patient and told me that he's had a miraculous outcome from it.
Okay.
The insurance doesn't pay for it, of course, and it's about $2,500 to $4,000. Doctors administer it. Chiropractors do it. I think you don't have to have a doctor overseeing the
problem. Right, right. Okay, so you're talking about a non-surgical procedure.
It's non-surgical decompression machine.
So it's traction. It's providing you traction. You're unloading the disc,
yes.
Which if it takes pressure off that injured disc, that allows the muscles to relax. My thought would be is that if you can try mechanical traction in a clinic, and something I think they could probably simulate this you know, this device fairly well. If you get relief with that, then that would give you some confidence going into this that this investment would be worth your while. But if you can't get anything more than even very short-term temporary relief with traction that can be applied in the physical therapy clinic or chiropractic clinic, then I'm not sure I would invest this money. It's a traction device. There are lots of traction devices out there. And, you know, before you invest this, I would have some sort of a trial that would give you some indication whether this is going to help or not.
How is that done in the clinic?
Well, we have different devices. There are tables where people either lie on their back or their stomach, and we can vary the position of your legs. And there's a belt across underneath your armpits, across around your chest, and there's a belt across the hip bones. And the machine provides a pull through the hips to unweight or decompress that low lumbar area. There are some devices where you're sitting or kind of standing and sitting, where again they can unload the spine, decompress the spine. So there's a variety of machines and equipment out there.
And is the phasing intermittent or constant?
Well,
it can
be either. You can set it either way. And I would try both before you would necessarily give up on this. But you can set the machines to provide an intermittent pull on-off, and you can set how long the pull is and how long the relaxation phase is, or you can do it constant.
And who does the setting? The physical therapist?
Yes.
Yeah, they usually do it by trial and error.
Yes.
They try it and see how it feels for you. They can adjust the amount of pull, you know, how right. many pounds of it pulls with, and see how your back responds. Some people feel great. Some people it increases their symptoms.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So if you haven't tried traction in other types of traction in the clinic, that's what I recommend first, Mike, before you fork out money for this.
Yeah, do you know if ordinary medical insurance covers any part of that?
Yeah, typically it will.
Yeah
typically
mm-hmm.
it will in with a traction in a clinic.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Yeah,
good
thanks,
luck.
Mike. Harold in Superior, on to you now. Hi, Harold.
Well, good morning.
Morning.
I have had back problems for probably something like 12 years. And it was identified that there was various problems down in my lower back, L4 and 5 or D4 and 5, whatever they're called. And among them, spondylolisthesis or losis or splitis.
Mm-hmm. Spondylolisthesis.
Yeah. Okay. And about a year and a half ago, I was involved. I got rear-ended. I was at a stop, and a car hit me about 35 miles an hour, and they hit the trailer hitch, and which saved the vehicle greatly, but did not do good things for me. It broke the seat, and I ended up flat in the back, you know, and the car was probably going 35 to 40 in the 30 zone, and never hit their brakes even.
Yes.
And I had been getting better. I probably went from about 50% disability, if to quantify it somehow, to maybe 30 or 35%, and then after that it just kind of went back downhill, and I'm now you know, somewhere around 60-65%, and the difference is I could have probably toughed my way through work before, and now I just can't. There's so much I can't do. I can't sit for a long time. I can't lay for a long time. I can't stand for a long time. Yeah. And I've got neurosis in my feet, neuropathy, I mean. And that's rather kind of started after this happened. Plus, I have pain in my groin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm wondering how much of this could be related to my back, or could my foot problem be something else. I did see a podiatrist, and he said, well, I think it is your back and not, like, my blood sugar is a little high in the 6-2 range.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, there's a couple things. The spondylolisthesis means degeneration. degeneration of the spine in that low lumbar area, that L4, 5, that's the fourth and fifth lumbar vertebra, or L5S1, the first sacral vertebra, are the most common areas in our body, in our spine, to wear out with some degeneration. And then you put an accident on top of that, and that's your weak link. And so that area is least able to withstand the injury. And that can set you up for local pain, back pain, and some buttock pain, as well as symptoms down into your feet. Now, symptoms in the feet can come from a low back problem with pressure on the nerves, or it can be a local problem. And it can be a local neuropathy, you know, inflammation of the nerves, or you can have impingement on nerves coming from a local foot and ankle problem. So there's a lot of things to sort out here. The trick is what can you do to get better and to start functioning at a higher level? As long as it's clear that your foot symptoms are related to your back, I don't know if you have access to a pool, working with a therapist and getting you in the water where your back is unloaded, along with the joints in your feet and the ankle, might be a place where you can be most active, most physically active, to start trying to get some flexibility and strength back, so that carries over to you being able to do more with land-based activities, more your normal daily activities. Have you seen a physical therapist in the last few months with this, Harold?
No, and I'm sure I'm a very good candidate for that. You know, and I do keep active because I can't sit for a long time. So mm-hmm. I do work around the house and some remodeling and things like that, and it actually seems to help a little bit. You know,
right.
As long as I can do it at my pace.
Yeah.
Well, and that goes along with your description. If you have degeneration, people tend not to do well in static postures or positions. So if they sit too long, stand too long, lie down too long, they hurt more, and they feel better with X amount of movement. You know, again, I think the therapist could help you, maybe give you some exercise to do to take some pressure off that back. They can also help try to tie in, are your foot complaints associated with your back or not? But it sounds like you're kind of heading in the wrong direction here. You were 30%, now you're down to 65%. You want to maintain your activity level as much as possible. And a visit or two, the therapist should be able to let you know to what degree they can help you with, and, you know, hopefully get you back on the ball rolling in the right direction.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Harold. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, our guests today, our physical therapists. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer now here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache or a pain or a sprain or a strain you'd like to talk about with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault, I hope you'll join us. We have one or two open lines here at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Give a call. Stuart in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Stu.
Hi. About 2 months ago, I'm a truck driver, and I was moving a pallet back, and I hit a bump, and a box fell off the pallet, and I tried to catch it.
Yep.
And it kind of pulled muscle in my elbow, and I went in, and I had it checked out. It started turning black and blue, and they said I pulled a muscle. So they wrapped it and everything, and about a week ago, I was throwing the ball with my kid in the backyard, and every time I throw, it hurts really bad. But I could pick up anything. I would pick it up, it's fine. It's just when I, like, throw a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm. Where in your arm does it hurt? And where was the bleeding?
It was on the inside, down on the bottom.
So down on your forearm?
Well, right on my elbow on
right
the bottom.
Right on your elbow. Okay. And the back?
Yeah.
Okay. And if you're not throwing a ball, can you do everything else you need to do? Can you lift boxes? Can you push stuff overhead? Can you push open a door?
Pushing hurts a little bit more than pulling.
Okay. And where does it hurt?
Right where I pulled the muscle, or so-called pulled the muscle. I don't know. Do you think I, like, ripped the muscle?
So, well, that's what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
You have some muscle attachments around your elbow. where you can rupture the muscle. When you make a muscle like Popeye, do they look the same side to side?
No.
Okay, what do you see?
I can barely make a muscle.
On the injured side?
Yeah.
You know, who did you see when you, did you see a family practitioner? Did you see somebody at work?
A family practitioner.
I'd probably go back and see if I could see an orthopedic. Because typically a muscle tear isn't going to be associated with a lot of bleeding. And you can rupture the long head of your biceps tendon, you know, your biceps, you know, your Popeye muscles.
Yeah.
It can become disattached from around your elbow, especially with a big fall or catch, that kind of muscle contraction where you try to grab something suddenly.
Uh-huh.
And how long ago did this? You said 2 months ago?
Yeah.
Oh, yikes. I'd go in and I'd have that looked at. I'd ask to see somebody else, specifically an orthopedic, and have that reevaluated. Okay, because if it was just a muscle strain, after 2 months, you should be feeling better. Your arm should look symmetric and so on. This is something that needs a better evaluation.
Okay.
Okay, right, can you manage that?
I think I can.
Great.
All right, good.
Yeah, you should do that, Stuart.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And good luck. Norman Wausau, your turn. Hi, Norman.
How are you?
Good.
Listen, I have a problem that's been going on for some time, and that is when I sit down for a period of time in a couch or a car or whatever, I start to get pain in my buttocks, and if I stay there long enough, it's hard to get up, and I have weakness and pain sometimes running down towards my knee on the left side. It was much worse about a year ago, and I stopped my statin drug for about 3-4 weeks, and the pain that I had when I was laying down, also in my buttock area, kind of went away. But I still have it when I sit, and the longer I sit, the worse it is.
Okay, and the you've not gone back on statins, I'm assuming.
I have, but I'm only at half dose.
Okay.
And that pain that I had even while I was trying to sleep, laying on my side, has not come back.
Okay. All right. Well, a couple things. One, you may be on enough of a dose that it's still causing problems with certain muscle groups, and it's a return of the problem you had before. Or, and I would probably this may be more the issue, is that you had two issues going on in that low back area and hip area, one being the statins, and one, you could have a little bit of degeneration in that area. That's not unusual to have pain. If you sit long enough, you get stiff and sore, and then you are really achy when you try to get out of that position. When was the last time you went in to talk to your physician?
I saw my orthopedist about a year ago.
Okay. All right. I think it might be time to go back in and talk to the physician who put you back on the statins and have them reexamine you and see if they think there's any way that the medication, the dose you're on, could be causing, you know, describe what's similar and what's different to when you were in a year ago and just see if the medication may be at least part of the issue again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Makes sense. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Norm. Appreciate it. Michelle in Coon Valley, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I'm a physical therapist who graduated in 1995 from UW-Madison, and saying hi to Bill and Lori.
Hello.
And just wanted to thank you for the excellent education that you provided me, which I've been working with the last 12 and a half years. And it's always a delight to hear you on the air.
Well, thank you.
Very nice.
We hope you're still continuing to learn.
Yes. Every day you learn at least a bundle of new things, or else you had your head in the sand.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for you.
Yeah,
good
exactly
for you.
Right.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Thanks,
you bet, Michelle.
Thank
you.
Well, that's a nice call again.
It is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was an easier one to deal with.
Than most.
Yeah. Thanks, Michelle. Pat in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'd like to ask them about a shoulder problem. I had an old injury several times years ago, and it wasn't bothering me till I did a lot of heavy-duty quilting, And my shoulder got so sore I had to quit. And that was in mid-February, and it hasn't gotten better. I saw an orthopod who took an x-ray and said, oh, that there's a spur on the acromion.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't get better, it should be taken off. But they, his term was, we don't like to do that. Well, he retired, so I went to one of his partners, and he said, oh, I don't think it's a spur. I think you should try some non-sed, so he put me on meloxicam. Mm-hmm. And he said, I don't think it's the bone. So mm-hmm. now I haven't seen any improvement.
Okay.
So I went to my son-in-law, who's a chiropractor, and he's been giving me some exercises.
Excellent.
And so on, and I still haven't noticed much difference. It's just when I do certain movements,
mm-hmm.
and it hurts even in down into my biceps at times.
Okay.
And even when I walk, it's better if I hold it next to my body and don't swing it normally.
Yep. So neither of those physicians sent you to physical therapy?
Yeah, I'm getting therapy, yeah.
Okay, what kind of things are you doing?
I'm doing exercises and lifting some 2-pound weights.
Okay.
And range of motion.
Okay, and how do all those exercises feel? Do they feel okay when you do them?
Well, they hurt.
Okay.
They hurt when I do certain movements.
Okay, and have you noticed any improvement with those things?
Well, not really.
Okay. And how long have you been doing those?
Going on 2 weeks.
Okay. It's a little early. I wouldn't give up after 2 weeks. You've had trouble since February. So I would agree with the second physician who said the spur isn't necessarily the problem. Usually it's due to the soft tissue, the muscles, tendons, and so on that have been overworked. So you dug yourself a pretty deep hole back in February, and you're just starting to work your way out of it. Now, the spur being there isn't necessarily causing the problem, but it's a symptom of the problem, and that is you have some degeneration around that shoulder. So trying to get the muscles and tendons stronger in the presence of a spur is a bit more challenging of a task. So you should continue to work with a physical therapist and continue to tell that person if things aren't going right, if the exercise doesn't feel right, if it feels like some of them are too much, they're making you sore, and some of them aren't right. You got to keep working with them until they find the right dosage of exercise that's right for your shoulder at this point in time. And that should change over time, which is why you need to continue to see that person on some sort of a scheduled basis so your exercises can be updated as you hopefully improve. But it's too early to give up on it yet. Only 2 weeks is way, way early. We look at 6 to 8 weeks really before we notice a big
change.
So, change, yeah.
So stay with it.
Stick with it, yeah.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Jimmy and Franklin, your turn now. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, and it was related to what she was just talking about being on your side. Having had a number of problems with my back after an accident, one thing a really good therapist told me was, really wait it out because most things, I think I read somewhere, most things that will get better at least by 8 to 12 weeks. And very often we'll find someone who has a problem and we get real impatient. So we go somewhere else or we buy something we saw on TV and that's around, 10 weeks we get better and we swear it was the acupuncture on TV product when it was really just the physical therapy all along.
All right.
Yeah, yeah.
You're right, Jim. And it's hard to be patient when it's you and you're hurting and you can't do things that you need and want to do. It's very difficult to be patient. But, if you have a really badly sprained ankle, it doesn't heal in 2 days. It takes some time before you regain full function. And the back is the same thing. And it is really challenging to be patient. Most people will recover and get better from that back injury. Where physical therapy can be a big help is if this is not the first episode of back pain. Episodes becoming more frequent or more severe, you want to stop those in their tracks as quickly as possible. But patience is part of it, yes.
Yep, patience.
Mm-hmm. And I think the analogy to the ankle sprain was right on and might be useful for Pat, where, you know, she had a significant injury to her shoulder, but she couldn't see it like you can see an ankle sprain. Right. And so you have to have that same kind of patience to work with the people who are trying to help you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Yeah, thank you for calling. And Brian and Spooner, we'll go to you next. Hi, Brian.
Hi. I have a recurring problem that is, I've noticed it, you know, probably the last 6-7 years, that every so often I'll wake up in the morning and the ball of my left foot, right at where the toe meets in that area of the foot, a horrible pain. It hurts as I step on it and I walk on it, and it usually hurts for 2-3 days, maybe a week, and then it gets a little bit better and finally just stops, and then I go on my, you know, I'm fine. I've gone into the doctor. They've x-rayed it. You know, there's nothing broken in there. One doctor suggested it was gout, did the blood test for that, and I didn't have gout. And I don't, you know what could be the issue or...
Okay. Well, what do you think?
Have you noticed any pattern to what you're doing the preceding day or week before this shows up?
Not really. I'm always walking either, when I was an environmental educator, and so I was always, you know, leading hikes or whatever like that. So, I mean, I was constantly walking. I'm a heavy person to begin with, so I'm putting a lot of
pressure on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind in that part of your foot. You have an arch that goes horizontally across your foot. That way you could, if you were on your feet a lot, had a lot of stress, put some overload on that, or you could have a little bit of a neuroma that gets a little stirred up, that you overstressed, and because your body can heal well, you kind of healed it without anyone doing anything for it.
And with that, we'll take a quick break and be back with our guests in just a few minutes. Stay with us. We're talking aches and pains and sprains and strains today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, and Bill Boisenault, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in, and lots of callers online. Wanted to touch on an email, I believe, from Irma from Glendale, who wants to know what physical work she could avoid, or she should avoid, in order not to upset her scoliosis. Now, she's 80 years old. She plays tennis 3 to 4 times a week and bikes 10 to 15 miles per day already, but wants to know what physical work she should avoid in terms of the scoliosis. So pretty active.
Vacuuming, house cleaning. Yeah, that'd be my thing. Dishwashing, yeah, anything that's not fun.
Whatever she can delegate. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, if she's doing all those things at 80 years of age, scoliosis, I wouldn't lose much sleep over it. And I'm not sure I would necessarily approach it much differently than anybody else who didn't have scoliosis. You know, again, I think the key to a healthy back is staying active and kind of cross training, doing multiple activities that stress your body differently. So the things she's doing load her spine in different ways, which is a good way to avoid repetitive overuse types of conditions. You know, careful how you lift. If you're lifting heavy and awkward things, ideally, if there's a second person who can help you, recruit somebody. Otherwise, you want to lift with your legs as much as you can. You want to use dollies and carts and wheelbarrows as much as possible for the heavy, awkward things. And if you feel like your back is stiffening, tightening up a little bit, it's telling you, I need a break. So if you're out in the yard gardening, is to go do a different task for a while and just let your back do something different than the repetitive bending or lifting.
Mm-hmm. It's great to hear. Yeah. Tennis 3-4 times a week, 10 to 15 miles a day on the bike. That's wonderful.
You bet. Yeah,
absolutely.
Keep it up.
Keep going.
It up. Yep.
Jen in Madison is up next. Hi, Jennifer. Jennifer, are you there? Oh, we lose her? I think we lost her. Paul in Onalaska. Let's go to you. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. How you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I have a number of issues, and I know some are related, I suppose, to old age and stress years and so forth. I'm 60,
mm-hmm.
And I've got one. I once had a broken bone in a wrist, and it didn't heal properly. I was told at the time, and that it would bother me as I got older, which it is. There's arthritis in there. I have a perpetual numbness, and it sometimes it also, I think from work, I have shoulder problems, and my whole arm at times goes numb, but my fingers are almost perpetually numb. And I also have arthritis in my lower back, again, probably from stress working and so forth, and a bulging disc, which causes numbness in my legs. And my doctor basically, you know, if it doesn't hurt or just watch it and so forth, and I'm wondering, is there anything that can alleviate the numbness and the pains, or I just have to kind of stretch and take it?
Okay. Bill, what do you think?
Well, this is a good time to call and very good reasons to call. On occasion, somebody just has to live with the symptoms that they have on occasion, but that really is the exception to the rule. If we start with your shoulder and your hand area first and the numbness in your fingers, you know, one of the things you have to worry about is there's something going on in your neck that may also be tied in with what you're feeling down in your feet or your low back area. And certainly the wrist issue could set you up for having shoulder problems. My point being is that if you haven't seen a physical therapist, even in the last year, year and a half, I'd go in and see one and have them examine you really from head to toe. You describe all the symptoms that you're having and see if there's some treatment in the clinic they can do to, you know, work out some of the scar tissue, start gaining some strength, but to put you on a good home program so you can stay as active as possible and hopefully with less symptoms. It sounds like you're putting up with a lot, and I'm not sure that necessarily pain-free is a reasonable goal, but there's no reason to not expect that you can't have some improvement. But with all the areas involved, you need somebody to guide you, and part of it telling you, recommending things that you should do and also some things that you should maybe modify or stop doing to minimize the pressure, whether it's your wrist or your back, and how you can compensate for some of the things that you've had for a while.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily throw in the towel and say you have to live with it at this point in time. If you haven't seen a physical therapist, that's a recommend, Paul. And they should be able to tell you in a couple of visits to what degree they can help you.
You got a lot of years left.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and the number of, given the number of areas you have involved, I always think pool right away. For people who have involved areas in several parts of their body, they really tend to do well in the pool. Sometimes people can't get in the position or posture necessary to treat one part of their body because they have a problem in a different part of their body. So that's why the pool tends to work well for folks like that. So I think there's hope for you.
Yeah, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Len in Madison, your turn now. Hi, Len.
Hi, how are you today?
Great.
I have a knee problem that has come about in the last 5 years. 5 years ago, I was pinned between two bumpers of cars.
Ouch.
And yeah, and the knees swelled, and a bone specialist couldn't find any damage. It's just possible nerve damage, but I was still able to walk and even jog. As over the 5 years, though, increasingly, the inside surface of my knee joint will swell up. And if I pivot on it at times, it'll sprain easily. There's no exercise that I've been able to do that doesn't make it worse. I was wondering if arthritis can actually be felt on the surface of a bone, on the outside surface of the bone, or could this be a ligament or another damage?
So you can, when you touch your skin, it hurts there. Is that what you mean by on the surface of the bone?
Yes. It's the skin, and the swelling underneath that skin is extremely painful.
And that's on the inside of your knee?
No. It's I'm sorry, the inside surface. Where your knees, if you were to stand and you touch
right.
your knees together, it's where those two joints touch.
Okay. Oh, and when you were squeezed between the bumpers, was it front to back or side to side?
It was front to back, but both my legs immediately turned.
Okay, so you had a twisting injury. Yikes! And okay, last question. You had the evaluation. Did you have plain radiographs? Did you have an MRI?
I had an MRI.
Okay, and they didn't see anything?
No, they didn't see anything.
Okay. Well, that I'm still not going to say that there couldn't be anything there, because an MRI is not an MRI. It's not an MRI. It depends upon who it's done and how it's done, who's done it, and who reads it. So that doesn't rule out that there could be some soft tissue damage there. So on the inside of your knee, it could be some arthritis that flares up. And yes, you could feel it on your skin, because the whole area tends to get inflamed and irritated when you get kind of an acute flare-up. Okay. Of that. It could be some ligament, some superficial ligaments, such as the medial collateral ligament of your knee. It really tends to have a tough time healing and healing well if you're someone who puts a high demand on it. Could be in another outer layer, the some of the muscle tendons, you know, so pes anserine traverses on the inside, and there are several bursa in the area that provide cushion between all those layers. So any of those structures could be the culprit. Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities. And in terms of no exercise has been able to help that, has that been, have you been in physical therapy? Have you had structured exercise?
The physical therapy ended 5 years ago.
Okay.
The physical exercise, the only thing I can do now is ride a bike.
Okay.
I cannot jog anymore.
Okay.
I can't play basketball.
Okay. It is time to be reevaluated and have someone take a look at your knee now 5 years down the road and see what the sequelae from that original injury might be. So you need to go and be reevaluated, and there should be exercise that you can do that will help you. But most importantly, you need a good evaluation so that the exercise can be directed towards the target tissue.
Aside from an MRI, is there a more advanced screen that would perhaps see something that the MRI couldn't?
I wouldn't say so. There are other tools out there to look at other specific things, but again, and like I said, an MRI is not an MRI. It depends upon how the plane, whether they have the plane of the orientation right, how thick the slices are, and what the gradient is. There's T1s, T2s, there's fast spin echoes, there's protein density. The people who really do this can fine-tune the MRI in a way to look at specific tissue based upon a theorized etiology of your pain.
Okay.
So you need a good evaluation by a good physician who understands this concept, who could then order the MRI, have the MRI done at a place where they really understand these concepts, and they can orient the MRI towards what they suspect your pathology is.
Okay, very good. I'll make an appointment and take it from here.
Great. Thanks, Len.
Thanks, Len. Jay in Winona, it's your turn now. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. I've been having heel pain on both feet lately, and also pain across the bottom of my foot, not all the way across the sole, but a little bit forward from the heel. Tends to be worse in the morning and after I sit for a while. I've tried stretching. Sometimes it makes it better. Sometimes it makes it worse if I overstretch, and I don't know what it might be or if you have any suggestions.
How long has it been going on?
Actually, it's been going on off and on for about a year, but it tends to get worse with exercise. Like if I take a jog or take a walk, sometimes that feels good when I'm doing it, but maybe the next day it seems worse.
Yep. And when you're stretching it, how are you stretching it?
I tend to either put my heel, put my toe up against the wall kind of, and my heel down on the floor and stretch that way, or on the stairs, stretching my calves.
Okay.
If I do any yoga exercise, like downward dog position to stretch my calves and my Achilles.
Okay.
I try that as well.
Okay.
Which I'm not sure, you know, it seems to help, but sometimes I'm not sure it's not making it worse. So.
Okay. Well, the first thing, the cardinal rule about stretching is not to overstretch, because overstretching can be just as bad as insufficient stretching. So I would increase the frequency of stretching, but you might want to decrease the intensity. What you're looking at is probably pretty classic plantar fasciitis, and studies have shown that it responds best to what they call tissue-specific stretching. And probably the best way to do that is sitting down and you cross your ankle over your other knee in a figure four position.
Okay.
And then you take a hold of your toes and you stretch them up towards your shin.
Okay.
And you hold that. So that's
on which foot? The foot that's
the involved foot. Well, you have both of them. So do both of them. So cross your ankle over your knee and grab a hold of your toes, pull them up towards your shin bone. The other thing you might think about is looking at your foot mechanics. If you have a big flat foot, sometimes you do well with an arch support, particularly for things like jogging. You want to make sure you have good footwear to control excessive motion at your foot. And then thereafter, it comes to treating the fasciitis itself. People tend to do well with a deep kind of massage. They fill like a soda bottle with water, freeze it, and then roll it underneath your foot like a rolling pin, kind of a cold, deep tissue massage to loosen that. So those are some of the strategies that you can use. And if you're still not turning the corner, then I'd go in and see a physical therapist and get sort of a head-to-toe evaluation looking at your mechanics and your strength. From the particularly the hips on down, and seeing if there's some other intervention that might be appropriate. Hip strength, foot mechanics, things like that.
And when you mentioned the foot support and the mechanics, is this something I should look to go to a podiatrist or orthotics through a podiatrist, something like that?
No,
or
I would
to get a better shoe.
I would start with an off the shelf. You can go to a drugstore and get some, and then they're in the $15 range.
Support.
Yeah, arch supports. And then sort of the next level is at like a running shoe store where they have a higher-end orthotic that are somewhere in the probably $30 to $40 range.
Okay.
I would start with those.
Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks, Jay. Mike in Washburn, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling on behalf of my daughter. She's a young adult right now, 24. But through high school and well in college, she had trouble with a right wrist where that she would occasionally get a cyst that would form and then it kind of come and go. And she actually had it surgically removed once many years ago. But just this last winter, she had gone in and her cyst was bothering again and had a doctor look at her. And he essentially what amounted to is got a second opinion and during the process had an X-ray and an MRI. And part of the diagnosis in terms of part of some pain and whatever in her hand and wrist evolved from what interpretation was is that the outer bone on her forearm was interpreted as being bowed out, and the doctor interpreted that as being just that's how God made her. And we're just curious to see if that is a common issue and if it could be he didn't recommend anything for physical therapy or elaborate much. But just wondering if that's potentially something that could be a concern or definitely something to watch. It could turn into be a little bit more serious.
So she had an MRI of her wrist?
Well, essentially a wrist, and it included the forearm as how they actually had done it.
Yeah. Okay. And did they didn't find anything at the wrist?
No.
Okay.
She previously had had trouble with her cyst there and growing.
Okay.
It did come and go.
Okay. And she's right-handed?
Right-handed, correct.
And what kind of sports was she in high school?
Golf and soccer and mostly those.
Okay.
Very aggressive player.
Okay. All right. Off the top of my head, I can't see any long-term sequelae from having that. And I guess in the absence of a parallel study on the other side, you can't.
Well, it's the same side. It's the same arm.
No, but the point I was getting to is that we don't know what the shape of that bone is on her opposite side.
Oh, excuse me, I see.
So, you know, that may be where the physician's coming from saying, you know, she has a little bit more bow than the average person. It, you know, it would be something to consider if she were in a sport where she was weight-bearing on her hands a lot, such as a gymnast, and also may have had some nutritional issues that might have affected her bone health. So those are things that come to mind in terms of the long-term health of her bones and joints. But otherwise, there's nothing that comes to my mind that's a red flag in this case.
Yeah. Mike, has she seen a certified hand specialist, either an OT or a PT?
No, just an orthopedic surgeon and then just a regular surgeon.
Okay. All right. I think if she's still having issues at this point in time, seeing a certified hand specialist would be worthwhile doing. You know, they can really help sort out tendons versus ligaments versus bones. They can devise splints or braces for certain activities that can keep a lot of pressure off certain areas that would allow her to function, you know, with potentially a lot less discomfort. You know, that sounds like that has not been done would be a good step for her to consider.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for your call. And Anne in Belgium, it's your turn. Hi, Anne.
Hi,
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about golf swing. I know someone who played golf, left-handed, swings quite vigorously, and after the 18 holes of golf, noticed some soreness from, like, around the elbow. Next day, that turned into a humongous bruise that extended almost down to the wrist. And do you have any thoughts on what could have occurred at that elbow joint with that golf swing that could have hurt some tissue or?
Well, that I mean, it sounds like a sprain of or strain of some sort. It's not common to get bruising in the in that area in the absence of a relatively acute injury. I mean, that implies bruising or bleeding in the area. So usually bleeding occurs when you have damage to the muscle itself. That's probably the most likely cause, or if there's some sort of a contusion where you actually hit it on something. So was there pain associated with this, or did the bruise resolve?
Discomfort because it you know, got a bit swelled.
Right.
And it took considerably a long time, maybe 2 to 3 weeks to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but was there still pain for that whole time?
Not to the point where it would affect, you know, what you do every day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's not a typical sequelae after golf at all.
Yeah.
It sounds like something was overstressed, overstrained, overstretched, and that caused some superficial bleeding in the area. One of the things that I would think about is the age of the patient. Is there any kind of underlying vascular issue that would cause more bleeding in that person?
Okay.
Are they on a kind of medication where they might have more bleeding or be more likely to bleed than somebody else? So those are the things that go through my mind.
Okay. So with the golfing activity, would you suggest that the person wear a supportive elbow brace or?
I'd probably recommend that they go out for a shorter bout of golfing.
Okay.
And see if it happens again. See if
okay.
it was just an isolated incident and then work your way up from there. I don't know if an elbow sleeve or support would help at all because it's not clear to me what the origin of the bleeding would be and whether or not a sleeve would actually help that. So my first instinct would be to cut back on the duration of the activity
okay.
and see if it's duration related and
all
then
right.
work back up from there.
Okay, thank you.
You
all
bet.
Right, thanks a lot for calling. John in Madison emailed us and wondered about glucosamine and chondroitin. Is it proven to help the knees?
Is it proven? Depends upon whose research you want to read. I would say at this point in time, there is more evidence that it's helpful than not. It's not helpful in all people, and you need to take it for about 3 months before you really know if it's going to help you or not. So if you can afford it, if you're not allergic to shellfish, it may provide some relief, some help.
Okay.
So the research shows that people who take it do well after a certain number of weeks. They do better than on a placebo. So it's been fairly well supported in the literature.
But it is to be expensive,
yeah,
too.
It's a
yes.
bit pricey. And,
yeah.
and Lori's right. You need to be on it for around at least 3 months to mm-hmm. know to if it's going to help and to what degree it's going to help.
Mm-hmm. The other intervention that falls into that sort of nutraceutical category is the Synvisc injections. There are people who are getting the Synvisc injections into their knee. It's the most common place. And that's, you know, a bit like WD-40 is the
yeah.
best analogy
yeah.
I can come up with. And people do pretty well with those, too. It's a hyaluronan, you know, it's a component of connective tissue, and it helps to somehow increase the viscosity, and it seems to improve symptoms long after the half-life of the medication is over. So that's another in that category of things that tends to be helpful.
Yeah, and if you've got the pain, I guess the cost is yeah. sometimes
yeah.
if you have the money, I mean, money
that's
can
right.
be no
yeah.
object on,
yeah.
on something like that.
Well, and I would say that it shouldn't be used instead of a good exercise program.
Right. Right.
So the exercise program is going to be the Clydesdale in terms of what's going to pull the most weight to help get you better. But the glucosamine and the Synvisc and some of those other adjunctive things can help create an environment where the exercise can work.
Always a pleasure, you two. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You.
You'll be back in about a month.
Sure.
Yes, we will.
And we'll do this all over again. Lori Tide-Brody, senior physical therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center, one of our guests, the other Bill Boys and Alt, associate professor in physical therapy at the UW Medical School. Pleasure to have them with us. They'll be back in about a month. Tomorrow at 11, we'll take a look at The Anatomy of Baseball. It's a series of essays on the sport edited by Lee Gutkind and Andrew Blauner. Looking forward to that. And Joe Rhodes of Madison has some advice on Apple computers. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.